Good afternoon. Happy Father's Day.
Thanks, Dad.
I think it's awfully funny. I was talking to Tom driving up here. After last Mother's Day, we had a little discussion. What comes first in your life? So this time I received a few calls from people apologizing for not being able to come because of Papa's Day. Never feel as if you're obligated to come here. You are a free soul. And your heart will always tell you what to do. I do not give you karmic debits for not showing up. Go where you like, do what you want. Be happy. I think we'll talk a little bit about jnana, siddhis, and spiritual healing. Many people ask me, Robert, how come jnanis never get involved in spiritual healing, nor cause miracles to occur? Why don't they use their powers like Sai Baba to produce vibhuti, necklaces, rings? Why don't they heal people like Jesus did? Now that's a pretty intelligent question. First of all, you have to remember what a true jnani is. The word jnana and jnani have been used very loosely in this age. A person who practices bhakti is a bhakta, devotion, a devotee. So it's easy to say, I am a bhakta, no matter what level of consciousness you're on. But when you come to jnana, it's completely different. You can't say I'm a jnani if you're practicing jnana. A jnani is a sacred word. It implies that you have transcended the universe, that you are no longer your body or mind phenomena. You are totally liberated. And of course, if you were, you would not say that I am a jnani, for there wouldn't be no one left to say that. You would remain silent. When we speak of such things as spiritual healing, and we try to compare jnanis to people like Sai Baba, Jesus, and others, we would be better off if we did not compare at all. Every teacher has their place. And every teacher did what they were supposed to do. Those of us who are aspiring jnanis should not even think of those things. we should not have concepts or preconceived ideas of what somebody is supposed to be or not to be. We should rather practice self-inquiry or becoming the witness. Spend our time doing that rather than comparing teachers and trying to understand why a Yani acts the way he or she does. The answer, of course, is very simple. There is no one home. No one is left to perform miracles. When you perform miracles, it is an emanation of the mind. Miracles are in the mind. There has to be a subject and an object. There has to be a doer and something to be done. Immediately you can see it has nothing to do with Jnana. And Jnani is totally free of those things. Yet it is true, when devotees think of the form of the Jnani, grace begins to flow. The grace is already flowing. But the sincerity of the bhakta, the strong desire for devotion, love, and freedom, pick up the Yami's grace. And he also becomes free. This is why it is written in the ancient scriptures, in the Upanishads and the Vedas, that the words and the silence of a Jnani is more powerful than what you consider God to be. For God is unmanifest grace. Shiva, the Self, is unmanifest grace. But the Yani is a channel through which the grace flows. And again, those devotees who put realization in their lives first they wanted more than anything else in this world. They want it so bad that they don't want it. They want it as bad as wanting food or water. Then they become silent. And the grace begins to flow by itself. Here's a story that explains what I'm talking about. There was once a sadhu who was totally destitute, very, very poor. And on top of that, he had cancer and was wasting away from cancer. For years he had prayed to God, "Oh God, if it is my karma to have these things going wrong in my life, Please give me the strength to be able to bear it. I don't care if you remove them from my life, but just give me the strength to be able to bear it. This is sincere prayer. This is how you should pray. Not to pray for something to be taken out of your life. Not to pray for enlightenment. Not to pray for things. But to pray to be able to have the courage and the strength to go through whatever situation you're going through. Anyway, after doing this for many years, God finally heard this prayer. One night he had a vision. God came to him and said, "You have been very sincere. You're a true bhakta. And I will abide in your request. I will send someone to see you. Do whatever he tells you to do, and you will be free." The sadhu opened his eyes, he couldn't believe it. And the next morning he waited for someone to show up. Finally, at about 9 a.m., there was a knock on the door. He opened the door, and there was a great sage standing there. He was able to feel that this was a real, high, evolved sage. And the sage looked at him and he said, "I have two bananas here. One banana is to take away your poverty, and the other one is to heal your cancer. But you must follow these instructions. Eat the first banana at 11 o'clock. And eat the second banana at 11 p.m. And he left. The sadhu was so happy, so overjoyed. He couldn't wait for 11 o'clock to come. At exactly 11 o'clock, he ate the first banana. And he sat down in meditation. 12 o'clock came, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. Nothing happened. He was getting disappointed and he turned on the radio. He had a little radio. The day before he had bought a lotto ticket and they announced the winning numbers and they were his. He had won $50 million. He was overjoyed. Now I couldn't wait for 11 o'clock to come, 11 p.m. At about 10 o'clock there was a knock on the door. He opened the door and there stood a disheveled old man, totally emaciated. He appeared that he had not eaten in about a month. He was in rags, about to drop dead. He held out his hand, "Food, please, food." And the sadhu didn't know what to do. His only possession of food was a banana. He was thinking to himself, "What should I do? I'm supposed to eat this banana at 11 o'clock. But here is another human being who is dying from want of food. surely God would think that he comes first. So he gave him the banana. And the old man left. He went to sleep that night. And God appeared in the dream. He had another vision. And God said, "Lord, did you follow the advice of the sage I sent you?" Just sad to explain what happened. And God said, "You fool. You just gave away your one chance to be healed of cancer." The old man who came to see you, if you would have let him die, his karma would be finished. For he was once a great king in a previous life. And there was a famine on his land. He hoarded all the food in his castle. He allowed all of the people to die. They begged him for food, but he wouldn't give them, and he saved it for himself and his family. He had plenty to spare. Because of this, he came back in this life as a beggar. He spent his whole life begging for food. He was always hungry because he never got enough. He began to realize the truth. Why he was a beggar. And he had turned within. He was about to drop the mortal coil and become free. But you interfered and stopped the process. Now, you will be very wealthy. But you will shortly die of cancer. And you'll have to go through the whole thing again. You will be born to a family that is sickly. You will develop cancer at an early age. And have to remember the truth about this story to become free and healed once again. Now the moral of the story is simply this. If you find a sage that your heart tells you is an enlightened being, you must listen very carefully to his eloquence and silence. You must listen to what he or she has to say in the silence. Even when the sage speaks, it comes from the silence. The words are really silence. A true yani has no time to go around the country healing people. He spends his time in the bliss of eternity, all-pervading, omnipresent. This means that a person in Japan who tunes into the vibration of the sage can become healed of a physical problem. And yet the sage has absolutely nothing to do with it. If he comes to the sage and thanks him and says, "You healed me, Master," the sage will deny it. for me mentally, humanly, had absolutely nothing to do with it, since he has no mind and no body. But it is the grace that flows through him that can be picked up anywhere in the universe. Now let's talk about you. Some of you sitting here today believe you have problems. Mental, physical, or otherwise. This is the first mistake you're making. For there exists only one power. You can call that God. There are not two powers, God and something else. There's only the one. Your job is to identify with the one. Your job is to understand that there is no room for anything else. If God be all-pervading, omnipresent, where would there be room for mental anguish, or sickness, or lack, or limitation, or anything else? The trees do not want for leaves. The flowers do not feel to bloom. Look at yourself and see your desires. What you're really looking for. It is only when you take your mind off your humanhood that something may happen to heal you of a condition that you think needs healing. It's as you begin to understand my real nature is absolute reality. I am that. I am pure awareness. Even though I appear to have a body, and I appear to think, I know that this is like a mirage, like hypnosis. And the body does not exist. So the malady, the sickness does not exist. The lack does not exist. The appearance of the world does not exist. And you identify in a simple way with your real self. Of course, you do that by inquiring, who am I? What is the source of the I? You forget about time and space, for the past and the future are in the now. You do not make it complicated, worthy, intellectual. You become simplicity itself. You simply remember every day that I am not the body-mind phenomenon. have nothing to do with the world. I is really consciousness. Emptiness, nirvana, satchitananda. I is really Parabrahman. I am that. Just to remember, not to forget to remember, is the important point. You must remind yourself. As soon as you open your eyes in the morning, do not think about the world's affairs. The world will take care of itself. The world is unfolding as it should. Do not think about your affairs. As far as you know, you are under the law of karma. And the Lord of karma, Ishwara, will take care of everything. So don't even think about those things. Do not think, in other words, of the world and its manifestations. And do not think about the body and its problems. But rather inquire, to whom has this body come? To whom has this mind come so that it keeps thinking and thinking and thinking? Who possesses it? I do? But my real I is absolute reality. Therefore, the I that appears to have a body and its problems, the I that appears to perceive the world and the universe, must be a false I. Yet where did it originate? What gave it birth? Then you can think of the power source, the spiritual heart on the right side of your chest. If you desire, you may see a picture of your deity that you respect in the center of the ball of light on the right side of your chest. Whether it's the Buddha or Moses or Jesus or whomever. And you can watch the eye as it comes out of that center and goes up to your brain. And then all of a sudden you identify with a body and the world comes into being and the mind appears to sustain it all. That's when you catch yourself. You reverse the process. You watch the eye returning from the brain. You abide in the eye. You hold on to the eye. You follow the eye thread. You trace the eye as it returns to the spiritual heart center and disappears. Then you keep silent. You just keep totally silent. If thoughts do appear, you inquire to whom do they come. and you keep starting off again. As you practice this every day, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, something will give. Something has to give. And you will become free. Free in the cells. Shanti, 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 Om, peace. Any questions you would like to ask?
Brother, before your enlightenment, what the disposition you were you in? God, were you established spontaneously in silence without any teachings?
Since I was born, the appearance of birth, I always felt different. I always felt I did not belong in my body. I never realized what was happening. But I felt out of place, as if I were carrying a load. And I had sporadic realizations where I lost consciousness. And when I opened my eyes, hours have passed. It's only when I was 14 years old and had that experience of merging in the self that I realized there is only the self and there's nothing else. Like everybody else, but I was aware that that was not me.
So you were like the witness.
Sort of. I didn't know what it was. I felt that I didn't belong in my body, but I didn't understand what was happening.
So you were more focused in consciousness than you were in identified with thought. Is that true?
Both. The thoughts were, who am I? Without using those words. I always used to think, why was I born? What is the purpose of life? I'm a child, I'll grow older, then I'll die when I'm old. Can this be me? I forget about it for a while and be like everybody else. But then it would come back by itself and sort of haunt me that I did not belong to the world. And here I am.
Well, those of us who are in the allegedly creative life and who have been trained and praised for vivid imagination find it very difficult to stop images and flights of fancy and romantic notions about this teaching from flooding the mind.
Do not try to stop anything. Simply inquire, to whom does this come? Always go back to the inquiry.
Continuous.
Who thinks these thoughts? Where is their source? To whom do all these thoughts come? Never let a day go by when you do not do that. And as you persevere, something will begin to give. Ultimately.
It is a strange feeling or something that happens.
To whom is it strange?
Yeah.
All these things you have to inquire. Who has the strange feeling? Who feels this way? Who feels that one? To whom does this come? And as you do, the thoughts will come less and less. And the space between the thoughts will expand greater and greater every day.
And then those of us of a practical nature do also wonder, what are the actuarial tables on actually having this happen? I just read something that said that there are just so few people who make this.
Never mind what you read. There are all kinds of stories about all kinds of things. Keep your mind on yourself. Abide in the eye. You are unique in your own individual way. Do not compare with anyone. Be yourself. You can read 10 different books and I'll give you 10 different ways of doing things. Dive within yourself. Go deeper and deeper every day. And I can assure you something will give. And you will eventually become a friend.
Robert, is there a stage, I've read about the Bhava Samadhi, there's a stage that your consciousness is so identified with itself that even the objects of the world are outshined. And they disappear in consciousness. That's called Bhava Samadhi.
Yes. When the objects of the world totally disappear, then you'll be left without a body. There will no longer be a need for your body.
Yeah, it's called translation, right?
Or you'll be dead.
But even with the eyes open, like the objects supposedly being so identified with consciousness, the objects that appear only, there's no objects anymore, they're just outshined and there's only consciousness.
What is consciousness? If there's only consciousness, what is it? Who is to experience it? As long as you still have a body as it appears, you will always observe the trees, the people, the flowers, the world. But you will not be attached or fooled by those things.
Isn't there a point that if you're so absorbed in the reality that the physics of everything changes and you're in outshining?
You are aware when you take the case of the chalkboard that you are like the chalkboard and the images are superimposed on the chalkboard and then they're erased and new images are drawn. Then they're erased and new images are drawn.
Isn't it a radiance though, a certain kind of a light, a radiance?
You go beyond the light and the radiance. The radiance and the light are of the mind.
That's like the outshining, like if you're so absorbed in that radiance, that even the objects just absorb into the radiance and they're outshined in the radiance of the consciousness.
That's all of the mind.
Is that right? That's one.
That's all of the mind.
Pure
consciousness can never be comprehended by the finite mind. There are no words to describe it. There's nothing you can do or say.
So it's not even light?
It's beyond light.
So in that state, if your eyes are open, the objects still appear?
The objects appear as appearances, but they still appear. Or you would leave your body.
Is there a state where the objects dissolve in light with your eyes open?
When you leave your body. But as long as you're still carrying a body or it appears to be doing that, you'll see objects. But you will know that they are not objects. They are like water in the mirage. They appear to be real, but they're not. And you can't be fooled by anything in this world. This is why a yani loses all concept of fear. There's nothing that can frighten him. There's nothing anybody can do to him or her. They're free, totally free. But they see objects.
That's a funny condition to be in, that everything that we're sure of is real is absolutely unreal.
Acquire that experience and see for yourself.
Has anybody who's heard your teaching become enlightened?
Anybody say it again?
Has anybody who's heard you or followed you become enlightened that you know of?
Yes.
Robert? Last week I asked Robert the tree. How the hell can you say that that's unreal or that's illusion? And Robert said, it's like a dream. And you wake up, what happens to the tree? And this morning I was sort of agitated. I called Gene Dunn in up north in Vacaville, who was Nisargadatta's student, and said, Gene, what do you mean that the world is unreal? And she said, well, it's like a dream. when you wake up, what happens to the dream world? And I said, I've heard that before. And I said, what's real then? And she said, the absolute is real. And I said, how do you know the absolute? And she says, you find the sense of being, the source of being inside of yourself, the self, and just dwell in it, and keep dwelling in it. I says, I have been doing that. And she says, well, it worked for me. But it seems like the yanis get together and coordinate their stories.
Yeah. She just got finished talking to Robin. Just a minute, yeah, we're all.
You're all in cahoots.
I said, it is going to call you in a couple of minutes.
The yanis incorporated.
Dad calls tell this, if Prima calls tell them that.
Maybe it's so hard because it's so extremely simple. Maybe the hardest thing in the world is to be the infinitely simple.
Of course. All you have to do is awaken now. Where you did not think of a minute ago or a minute from now. You just awaken. the past and the future become condensed in the now.
Would there be any advantage to having intensives like they have in Zen, where for a week you do nothing but practice who am I, or I am?
All these things help. But in the last analysis is between you and yourself. You and I know many people have been Zen monks, been Buddhists, been everything under the sun for many, many years. And they still hadn't realized the self. This is because they're usually following external procedures. Instead of introverting everything within the self, they're still reacting to outside conditions. Thinking, for instance, that a lake or a tree is so beautiful and you want to be like the tree or the lake. Where in reality, the tree or the lake only exists because your mind exists. You're giving form to everything in the universe. Therefore, when you become introverted and your mind goes back within the heart, the beauty and the joy and the love that you felt toward the tree or the mountain or the lake becomes the love for the self. You are that. And you're at peace. For you never have to go out again looking for beauty, looking for happiness, looking for joy. You have become a living embodiment of that yourself.
Robert? I want to ask a very mundane question. I was reading here that you were 18 when you went to India.
Mm.
What?
17, 18. Yeah.
Along the analogy that you were giving, everyone has heard of Sister Teresa, helping the pariahs and the
Mother yeah. Teresa.
What?
Mother Teresa.
What did I say?
Sister.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear that.
Freudian slip.
What? Freudian slip, yes. Everyone's heard of Mother Teresa. If all of these poor indigent pariahs of India came and she said, "Don't bother me. I'm about my own business today. I'm perfecting my self-realization." The question I'm asking, how come some, not excluding you, how come some of the most selfish, egotistical, abominable arses I know, or someone who's been Zen or whatever, and they couldn't give you a ride to get some food if your life depended on it? I mean, they're so busy doing their own thing. So, I mean, I understand that you say you have to... Mm. Getting yourself, but there is a difference between going beyond the call of duty and helping somebody and being so selfish you don't give a darn about anybody.
Exactly, I've explained this before. Most of the people you're describing are under the erroneous conclusion that they have to only work on themselves and the rest of the world doesn't exist for them. But what I say happens is this. As you work on yourself, you become more compassionate. And automatically you're of service to humanity. You don't really go out of your way, but the people who come into your aura, into your life, you're always of service to them. You become more loving, more compassionate. But you also realize that you are the self of all. Everybody, everything is an emanation of your own mind. So when you find yourself and you became alive and awakened, then you will include everybody and everything in this world. And you will be an asset to humanity when you sit in the silence and do nothing. For it encompasses everything and everyone. Whereas people like Mother Teresa are bhaktas. They're devotional people. And it's their karma to spend her life helping like she does. She couldn't stop if she wanted to. This is why she came to this earth. And yet we're all different, karmically speaking. We all came to this earth for a certain reason. Mother Teresa can never sit in a class like this. She would be looking at sick people, trying to help, going around patting everybody on the head, putting bandages on people, putting the curicomb and eye down on everybody. This is a karma. And this is good. There's nothing wrong with that at all. This is why it's so important to understand. Never judge anyone. Compare yourself to no one, and compare no one to no one. But ask for the truth within yourself. Pray to God to reveal the truth to you, where you belong, what you're supposed to do, and dive deeper and deeper into the self. And if you're supposed to help others in this world, to spend your life doing that, you will find a way. And it will happen all by itself. So leave everybody alone. Judge no one. But continue to work on yourself till you become free. And then you will realize the truth about the whole thing.
Without
thoughts, after inquiry, you automatically
gravitate to the heart center on the right side of your chest.
You
feel yourself there.
First, you have to gravitate to the heart center before you remember those thoughts. If you do not gravitate there, you will have thoughts, because the eye is in the brain, and it gives you the idea that you are the body, and you are the mind, and you are the world. Therefore, the idea is to make the eye go into the heart center. Then you will be without thoughts.
And do you do that by
inquiring?
Inquiring, and do you put your attention in the right side of the chest?
You can imagine that the right side of the chest is like the sun, the light of a million suns, with your favorite deity in the center. And you can also imagine that the eye is going from the brain to the right side of your chest into the mouth of the deity until it's dissolved and assimilated, and then keep silent. And every time new thoughts come, inquire to whom do they come. We have some announcements, I think.
Yes, sir. Is Dana still in the hospital?
No, she came back yesterday.
We have some Yana Orange t-shirts for those who are interested in procuring them. I was thinking of giving them out in different ways of that, but it would only create trouble. So decided to sell them for a cost and leave us and sell as each of you are interested. Let me see, is there anything? Oh, yes. Also, I thought it would be a good idea that we start the community meetings we had had a couple of times when problems arose, and they were a nice thing. And maybe we could start one once a month after satsang just to see, you know, things that are going on in our lives, what's going on with practice, what's going on in the Sangha. Beginning maybe next week, people interested? After satsang? Okay.
Yes. To the tapes. Last week we had some of the tapes of David, and we sold them all out. And there were some people who didn't get them, and some who weren't here. So they are, I have some, they're still good. Anybody want any of the $10? And if you need to. Please, that is separate from the donation box. And also, I want to say, we finished, Greg and I finished our latest transcription, and it truly is one of the most beautiful. I say that about everyone, but it's truly because he's a fan of it. In it, Robert says everything is in this one, and it's his word. So I have four of them if I can get four people to. And it is beautiful. It really is.
I'm curious.
About 10 times already, and I can't get enough of it.
Robert, could we also make some copies of What Is He Doing?
Oh, I agree. Yeah. Or that's up front. I should get
it. Where's that?
What I read.
Oh, that, sure, of course.
Okay. What you read today, you mean?
Thank you.
Do you have just one copy today?
No.
Mary can make some copies.
Who wrote that, Robert?
I wrote them.
Oh, that's funny.
I made a couple copies. I didn't ask if it was all right.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Maybe that should be in the transcript.
Can you?
Copy that into the
Wonderful.
Wonderful.
We can all read it every night.
Yeah. We should.
What about this?
Now, if you want to take these, we can put it over on the table.
What is it?
Or I'd like one myself.
What is it?
This poem.
Oh, it's a poem.
Oh,
it's
a poem.
That's beautiful.
So I can put it over here for you. Right,
we have some prasad. Feel free to help yourself. I'm open.
First customer.
Yes, it's
And now giving up yourself to Him. Your love will guide you. All fear will vanish then.
Sell things here. But you've all met David, and he's a struggling musician. You can use the money.
Robert, can we be making progress even though we don't feel we are?
Yes.
Except in your case,
Bob. Yeah. You're the one accepting. You're
creator. I'm the Holy Spirit.
You just have to give up, is all.
I know, I'm going to kill myself as soon as I get home. Got the gun already loaded.
Just adding the cure from a bandage into your homeopathy.
We need a promotion to 201 life.
Yes, right.
No, that's to be the best RTD ride in the city. No stress, and hardly anyone else rides it, and no pushing.
Forest Lawn is the best.
It's the best ride.
No, that's not that bad.
But you got to be ready to drive the Forest Lawn bus.
Because none goes there.
It's a great sculpture.
Mm-hmm. The Phantom Bus Driver.
Remember to love yourself, to bow to yourself, to pray to yourself, to worship yourself, because God dwells in you as you. Peace, I love you. Happy Mother's, Father's Day, Son's Day, Daughter's Day, every day. Enjoy your life.